You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. This is David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to follow the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you once again by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Moment segment coming up later in this episode. Should be a good one. Nothing really major going on with the Miami Heat per se, but I still want to get into a comparison to another offseason plan from a past season in Miami's history, one that might bear some semblance to this upcoming offseason. And then there's also the possibility of a reunion with some former Heat players. But I'll start off in Utah with Utah Jazz great Dwayne Wade. Does that rub you the wrong way already? Because I think it's something we're going to have to get used to. I saw a lot of activity this past week regarding Dwayne and his affiliation with the Utah Jazz. He is now a part owner, has been for some time. Doesn't seem like it was much of an issue. Felt like there was some kind of buzz regarding why he might choose the Jazz in particular, but then seeing him over the last week when he refers to my Utah Jazz, and he really said this, my Utah Jazz, and I think it was a tweet or an interview. I can't remember exactly where it was, but either way, referring to his team as he is a part owner. You see him on the sidelines next to Gabrielle Union talking to Jazz star Donovan Mitchell, a player who has garnered significant comparison to Dwayne himself. So Mitchell, perhaps the best player in the playoffs thus far. He missed some time because of injury, but he's had a phenomenal run against the Clippers, leading them to a 2-0 start, the Utah Jazz over the Clippers so far in their series. But it's the sight of Dwayne in Utah referring to that team and not being a part of Miami's future or culture or whatever you want to call it that I think rubs a lot of you the wrong way and has upset some people. And I have to say, I don't really get it. Perhaps I'm being naive. Look, this has become pretty well established now that for me, I will always present something that is more likely to be down the middle. I don't think there's any need to really blast Dwayne for what he's doing, nor do I think it's as a sad moment to see Dwayne cheering on the Utah Jazz. I don't think anything is particularly fractured between his relationship with the Heat or anything like this. And I'll start off there because I think that's really the case there, is everybody's thinking, well, why didn't he do something similarly with Miami? Why doesn't he have a part ownership stake in the Miami Heat? And Mickey Arison, I think kind of strangely, really taking to Twitter or having a prepared statement saying something similar was offered to Dwayne in Miami. He chose to look elsewhere. And then you kind of see the news about Dwayne and why he chose the Jazz. And he's talking about his partnership, friendship with the Utah Jazz majority owner and why he's a big part of the team and why he's going to be important and intrinsic to their development. And then, you know, it starts to kind of, people start to get a little surprised at why maybe he kind of shied away from Miami. And I don't think that there's anything fractured there. I also don't think that relationship is as great as everybody makes it seem. I think that's part of the problem, too, is that there is this proprietary sense that fans get about players on quote-unquote their team that is somewhat misplaced, which is why you have the incidents in Cleveland in 2010 and in Oklahoma City in 2016 and on and on. I think players continue to make decisions that best suit them. They'll never have the same connection to their team that you do. This isn't any kind of new concept here, the idea of rooting for laundry. But think about how when Dwayne left in 2016 and Justice Winslow, who I'll talk about later on in the show, seemed to kind of get into it with Dwayne a little bit, get a little chippy with him during a game against the Chicago Bulls. I think a lot of Heat fans were pretty happy about that. So it just goes to show you how fragile the sense of fanship and love and, again, that proprietary nature of it. You don't own these players. They work for the team. Oftentimes, they get drafted by those teams. They give their heart. They give their soul to that team. They do everything they can because they're competitive, because they want to win. And yes, they establish a bond with the franchise, the city, and everything else. Dwayne said, even since he's joined the Jazz, he'll always love the city of Miami. He'll always love the fans there. That doesn't mean that he's going to be, what, Mickey's errand boy? That he's going to be a part of that ownership group where he just doesn't have as much of a stake as he does now in Utah, or doesn't have as visible a role? Would he still be able to, would he feel comfortable talking to players and that lineup that he played with? You know, he's Jimmy Butler's teammate in Chicago. He's played with Udonis Haslem. He's won championships with those guys. I mean, does he really feel like he would be able to have that same kind of connection? Maybe he just needed a clean break. Hell, maybe he's living in Los Angeles. Maybe it's just easier for him to get to Utah than having to drive all the way fly all the way to Miami for regular ownership meetings. He's a player. He's a millionaire. He's a successful businessman. He's building his brand. And part of that brand is kind of cutting ties and separating yourself to some degree from your connection to Miami. It's more about a global brand, right, at this point in time. I don't think he has to be viewed as Miami Heat legend Dwayne Wade as much as you might like him to be. And I think that's part of the issue here for all of you, or for many of you, because I've seen, you know, some people offer some rational perspective there that, you know, it's not that big a deal. We shouldn't be reading that much into it. And I totally agree with that. I don't think there's anything there. I don't know that there's any kind of friction between him and the front office or Pat or anything like that. Look, I mean, it was a pretty difficult situation in 2016 that they've repaired it. You know, families do tend to get into fights, right? You try to gloss those over. You try to fix them. You try to move on as best you can. But there's always going to be some kind of issue there at some point in time. And look, kudos to Dwayne for wanting to do something a little different. And maybe he's playing chess, not checkers, right? And he's talking to Donovan and saying, you know what? You'd be perfect for Miami Heat culture. That would work, right? I mean, it worked for Jimmy. Let's see if Donovan Mitchell decides to leave the Utah Jazz at some point and finally join the team where he rightfully belongs. It would have been nice to be able to draft him and Bam in the same year. Unfortunately, did not work. Thanks a lot, Denver Nuggets. You really screwed the pooch on that one. Moving on here. I don't know. The whole Dwayne situation feels kind of strange. So I felt like I should talk about it because I really don't see why people are so up in arms. We've seen players do this time. Like Shaquille O'Neal spent a better part of his Lakers tenure beating up on the Sacramento Kings and Hall of Famer Chris Webber and Jason Williams and that whole crew, right? And then all of a sudden, he buys an ownership stake in the team, and nobody really reads too much into it. I don't think Laker fans were upset about him. But, I mean, they're upset about everything, so who cares? But maybe they were, maybe they weren't. But I don't think that they have that same kind of identity problem. You know, it's all move on to the next thing. And look, Shaq played for, like, what, five or six different teams after he left the Lakers in 2004. So it wasn't really that big a deal, I guess. He won a championship with the Heat. They had Kobe. It didn't really matter that he played for the Suns and then the Celtics. The Cavs? Was it just four teams? I feel like it probably should have been more. I don't know. After he left Phoenix, it all kind of turns into a blur there, right? The big Shamrock in Boston, I remember that much. And then I think his last season in Cleveland in 2009-10 with LeBron James. Well, good. I'm glad he went there in 2009-10 because otherwise LeBron might not have left Cleveland in 2010 to join Miami. But, you know, Michael Jordan was part owner of the Washington Wizards and then, you know, sold his ownership stake there so he could rejoin the team as a player, something that had never been done before. And who's going to tell Michael Jordan no? Certainly not David Stern at that point in time. Then eventually he becomes the owner of the Charlotte Hornets. He's still ubiquitous in Chicago. He's still Michael Jordan. The Last Dance showed how much he's connected to that team, but he's connected to that team as a player. I think now you look at Jordan, his, you know, old man jeans and weird outfits and everything else, and I don't think anybody remembers him. Well, I don't think it's not that they don't remember. I don't think they think of him necessarily as Chicago Bull great Michael Jordan. He's Michael Jordan. And at some point, people around and outside of Miami will look at Dwayne as NBA legend, Hall of Famer Dwayne Wade, not Heat legend Dwayne Wade. That they'll remember him for mostly his career in Miami, that's fine. But I think they'll also remember him for just being a great player and a player who impacted the NBA and was able to win championships alongside LeBron James, Shaquille O'Neal, and others. That's perhaps the biggest, that's his legacy right there, is NBA great. Perhaps the third best shooting guard of all time. I mean, that's, I suppose, debatable. And a lot of people now, especially after Kobe's death, maybe not quite willing to talk about that subject. But I think there's a pretty strong case about how Dwayne played his career that maybe he's better than Kobe was. But I guess, you know, he's up there, right? Let's just say he's up there. Dwayne, Kobe, Jordan, Jerry West, James Harden, top five, right? Top five shooting guards of all time. Does it really matter? No, it doesn't. But anyway, I just wanted to talk about that subject a little bit because it feels like a lot of people have been pretty upset about it. And I know they're kind of emotional seeing Dwayne be part of another team, but you're going to have to get used to it. Like, it's been a season or two now since he's moved on from Miami. He's not, I don't think he's been in Miami since then. Like, not as a Heat fan or part of any Heat activities or anything like that. He's moved on. He's trying to cut ties with the organization. Not completely, but to some degree. Like, he has to be able to just move on. He has to be able to explore other opportunities. Look, Roa Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated, friend of the program, just interviewed Dwayne for his hosting of The Cube, I think it's called. I believe that's what it's called, The Cube, based on an English TV show or British TV show, a game show specifically, where Dwayne is hosting it. And he's trying to separate himself from the idea of what he once was, build that brand a little bit more as something that is not just a basketball player. He's a wine connoisseur. He's a game show host. He's a NBA TV analyst as well. So there's lots of different things there. And he's just trying new things. I like that part of what Dwayne mentioned in that interview with Rowan, where he said, you know, I'm trying to do new things. I'm trying to find different things. And why not? If I wind up falling flat on my face, if I'm the worst game show host of all time, at least I tried. And I think that's the kind of spirit that a lot of people could incorporate. But, you know, this is it. This is the reality now. Dwayne is no longer a part of the Heat organization, only in our hearts, minds, and memories. And perhaps that's as fitting as it's ever going to be. But anyway, I want to talk to you about a brand new segment brought to you by our friends and partners over at Michelob Ultra. It wasn't really a tough choice because there's not a lot going on with the Heat this past week. But to me, my pick for this week's Ultra moment has to be when the NBA decided to fine Pat Riley $25,000 for his comments during a Dan Le Batard segment where he mentioned that he would leave the key under the mat for LeBron if he wanted it, although that key is probably rusty, but he'll get him a new one. Something to that effect. I'm totally paraphrasing here. Not that it matters. One, completely innocuous statement by Pat Riley. Not really tampering. That was the fine, right? They were defined it as tampering because he's talking about a player under contract anywhere else. And Ethan Skolnick of Five Reasons Sports brought up a pretty good point himself where he said, well, if he were talking about Hassan Whiteside or Dion Waiters, former Heat players, would anybody have given a crap about it? Would they have said anything about it? And the likelihood is not. I don't think anybody would have cared. But it was LeBron, and Lakers fans are testy, and they're just out of the playoffs too. And there's talk of Disney frauds and Mickey and all the ridiculous pejoratives directed at the Lakers and the past season where Miami and the Lakers were able to enjoy some success. But it's the moment itself, though. To me, what it says is Pat Riley is a guy who just – he doesn't give a damn about the politics anymore. He told Danny Ainge to go, you know what, and he's always been very direct. And at the same time, while Wes Goldberg and I recently talked about how Pat says nothing and everything all at the same time in his end of season presser, I think that comment about LeBron was kind of a way of saying, you know what, we're open to bringing anybody back to this team that is willing to do the work and can help us get to that next level and win a championship, because that's what it's all about. It's not about ego. I think as much as we'd say, oh, you know, Riley would never want that guy on the team. Like, even when the conversation about James Harden first came up, it's like, oh, this guy's going to spend all of his time with strippers, with strip clubs and you know, spending money and doing all this and flirting around and going to places without a mask in the heart of the pandemic and everything else. And everybody's wondering, would Riley even want a player like that? It's like, yeah, hell yeah, he would. Why? He scores 30 points per game. That's why he would. And I think that's the same thing. And that moment where he's kind of like, again, joyful, happy, enjoying the idea of being the general manager, and I talked about this recently on another podcast. I think Pat Riley still has lots of years left. I think he still wants to bring a championship to Miami. He still likes the idea of being able to connect with players and woo them and convince them that Miami is the place for them. And I think this is part of that, saying to LeBron, you know what? When you're done with your movies and whatever else you want to do, you want to come back to where you were happiest as a player? That's Miami. And that's what Pat Riley is always willing to do. So go check out all the other exciting Ultra moments with the hashtag Ultra Moment. Remember, when it comes to Michelob Ultra, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Only 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. Joy creates success. Enjoyment isn't in the end game. It's the whole game. And I think Pat Riley certainly has enjoyed all of the different aspects of his long and storied career in Miami. Miami Heat are out of the playoffs, but the road to the finals still continues. And our coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. We can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. Well, one of the things that I recently talked about in a past episode this week was the idea of whether or not Miami was closer to being a contender after their trip to the NBA Finals, or whether or not they're a team that might need a complete overhaul after their first round exit at the hands of the Milwaukee Bucks, who finally won a game against the Brooklyn Nets. A weird one. I think it was a low scoring, below 90 points for both teams, and Milwaukee able to get a 3-point win on a night when Brooklyn's big three wasn't quite putting up points the way they had in the past, and they couldn't get the kind of support from their supporting cast that they had in the past either. So interesting for that series to go out the way it has. The playoffs have been fun, I'll be honest with you. I am really enjoying a lot of the games, even though Miami is no longer in the chase for the title. I think it's going to be interesting. I also talked about the fact that I think it's going to be Phoenix and Brooklyn. That's just the way it seems like it's playing out. I could go completely wrong, and that's part of the fun too, is that, you know, the Clippers could bounce back, and who knows what might happen with Denver. They might figure it out once they go back to the Mile High City. But as far as the playoffs so far, have been great. A team that has not won a title perhaps ever is probably going to win a title this season, and that's something that NBA fans in general should be appreciative of. You know, I wasn't going to go on this tangent, but now that I think about it, a lot of the narratives that come out with the playoffs and everything else is, especially even now with the Knicks having achieved some modicum of success this past season, it's like, the NBA is better when the Knicks are better. To who? To whom? The 29 other teams that don't give a damn about the Knicks? Like, it's just so ridiculous to me that the Knicks, they do have a large, albeit, fragile fan base that doesn't always follow their team or support the team. And that's part of the hate, right? If you're a Knicks fan, you kind of just love to bag on them and love to bag on the lack of success. They achieved something this past season. They made the playoffs, and then they got properly spanked by the Atlanta Hawks. And I don't think that they're a great team. I think they're a team that needs to continue to develop and work. And look, I like Julius Randle. I like Tibbs is fine, although I think there's merited criticism there. But this idea that these teams have to flourish, that they can't have, you know, quote unquote, small market teams occasionally challenge the bigger teams like the Lakers and the Knicks and others for success, I think that's ridiculous. I think you follow the league long enough, not even covering it like I do, you just follow it as a fan. You get invested in the stories of every other team. You know, Oklahoma City was a popular franchise until they lost 3 of the top 10 players in the league in the same, you know, in within 2 or 3 years of each other. Like, that's going to happen. You know, I'm Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a fine player, but no one's tuning into Oklahoma City to watch Darius Bazley play, you know, or Bazley. I don't even know how it's pronounced. That's the whole thing, right? It's like, those are the kinds of things that take away from a team being followed as closely, you know, for people wanting to know what's going on in Oklahoma City. This isn't a knock against a small market. It's a knock against a team that's not particularly good. Portland has a superstar player. Why haven't they gotten the kind of perhaps fame that they deserve? Well, because they struggle in the playoffs. Because you've also eliminated half the country watching you, because a Portland Trailblazers game doesn't start till 10 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock on some occasions. I mean, I'd love to be able to stay up and watch those, but I can't. And I'm not going to. So I'd love to be able to watch as many Blazers games as possible, but the reality is that's also not realistic. So I don't think there's a small market, big market conversation worth having. I talked about this when, you know, everybody was so up in arms about the buyout market and why it favors big teams and everything else. It's like, do you remember when Caron Butler chose the Oklahoma City Thunder over the Miami Heat? You know, was that a victory for small market teams? It's like he wanted to play in Oklahoma City because he was going to get more playing time. That's all it was. That's the reality. I mean, Gorgui Dieng just signed with the San Antonio Spurs. Like, that's not, there's small target, small market teams can lure free agents in the buyout market if they're good. Brooklyn was a small market. Like, you know, New Jersey, there were the New Jersey Nets just a few, you know, years ago. And even just a couple years back when the Brooklyn Nets were really, really bad, nobody gave a damn about them. There's, it's not like they were a big market then. They were just a bad team that played in a big city. It's, who cares about big market? Like, you, as fans, there are these weird insecurities that people develop, like, over their team. Like, you know, look at Milwaukee and look at teams all across the NBA landscape. It's like you start to get real, really sensitive about how people perceive your team, or your city. It's like, take it easy. No one's really giving it that much thought. No player is going, man, I'd really love to go to Portland because they've got a great superstar like Dame Lillard and a fine ex-coach like Terry Stotts, but I can't play there because it's Portland and not Los Angeles. I don't think anybody gives a crap, you know? Players are going to go where they're going to get paid, where they're going to get playing time, where they're going to get an opportunity to win a championship. That's why Blake Griffin went to Brooklyn. It's not like he was going to choose any other team. He went to Brooklyn because, well, they've got three superstars there and a really good chance of winning a title this year. That's all it is. That's not a big market conversation. That's a your team sucks conversation. And it's time you start to be a little bit more self-aware in it. If you happen to be one of the people that holds those insecurities about your team, your city, and your franchise. In any case, I wanted to talk a little bit about that kind of conversation about contender or first round exit, where the team actually lies, because I think the reality is, as it so often is, somewhere in the middle, and I think you're probably going to see a reaction by the front office that mirrors that. And I think they see that this team can be a contender because you've got two top 25 players in Bam and Jimmy Butler. He's also got a very short window to try and bring Jimmy a title here. And so what I think is that we will see a reaction similarly to Pat Riley's in 2005. I think this team's going to get blown up. I'm not sure how. I don't know when. I think it's going to get blown up because I don't think that they can rest on their laurels. Like, I know a lot of people want to kind of glom towards the comment from Pat Riley about Tyler being a core piece and things of that sort. Look, it's Pat Riley. What's he going to say? He spent most of the year trying to trade his 20-year-old ass, and he's not going to be like, he can't hold his hand through all this and tell him, no, your part in team history will be etched in stone forever. Don't you worry about that. Like, the reality is, if you can get away from Shaquille O'Neal, Chris Bosh, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, etc., you can go ahead and part ways with Tyler Herro. That's not to say they don't have faith in him or they don't have belief in his ability, but if that ability or that belief can lead you to an established superstar, well, it's going to happen. They believed in Caron Butler. They loved Caron Butler. They still love Caron Butler. Like, Caron's an assistant coach there because how much the first 2 years of his career meant to him. Like, he loved the 2004 season, 2003-04 season with Dwayne as a rookie when Caron was in his second year and building something as part of a young core alongside Lamar Odom and Brian Grant, etc. They traded him after 2 years. Lamar Odom spoke about Pat Riley almost like a paternal figure. Has everybody forgotten this? Like, he went through some weird machinations to play in Miami. Remember all that? I've talked about this before. I know a lot of you listening probably have forgotten how this all worked out. But it was the Los Angeles Clippers. They had a young team there, and they had a certain number of restricted free agents, Elton Brand being among them, Corey Maggette being another, and Lamar Odom being the third. And so the Clippers, under a notoriously racist bastard and cheap, that's that, Donald Sterling, didn't want to pay all three of those players. Pat Riley knew it. So what did he do? He brought in Elton Brand, who was an undersized forward center. And, well, at that time, undersized. And nowadays, he would be a perfect center. But in any case, he signed him to an offer sheet. And then he had already signed Corey Maggette to an offer sheet, too. So the Clippers had a choice to make. Would they let Elton Brand, probably the better of the two players, walk? No. They chose to match the offer that Miami made to Elton Brand. They kept Maggette. They kept Brand. And then all of a sudden, they could not keep Lamar Odom. And who signed him? But Miami, the team that had went ahead and offered a large amount of money to Elton Brand. And then, you know, Lamar came to Miami And Riley said, this was the plan all along. We wanted this guy, his versatility, his skill, all this talk. And for Odom, I remember him talking about Riley again, like almost like a paternal, in a paternal way, about how it meant so much to play for Coach Riley and to be a part of that team. Of course, Riley stepped away, was not the coach for that season when Dwayne was a rookie. So that never really panned out either. And it didn't matter. Like, Lamar still loved his time in Miami. I think it still meant a lot to him. And then after 1 year and a fantastic playoff run led by rookie Dwayne Wade, he gets traded to Los Angeles for Shaquille O'Neal. These things happen. And so I think we could see a lot of different things at play this year. I think in 2005, the following year, when they traded all the players that they had on their roster for Antoine Walker and Jason Williams and everybody else, that was a recognition that things need to change. And that's the comparison that I think kind of bears out for this upcoming offseason. I think Miami recognizes Pat Riley, the front office recognized it's time for a change. You can't win the way you do. Guys like Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn are not going to take you to the promised land. I could see them moving on from almost everybody, not named Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade. Maybe it's a little excessive. Maybe Duncan still could be a big part of this team moving forward. And again, I think the team loves what they get out of Duncan, but I just don't think they can afford to keep these guys on the roster for much longer. Maybe that's not how it works out. I've been wrong about these kinds of things in the past. I thought there was going to be another big offseason a few years ago. It didn't really pan out that way. Because what? It takes two. You need to be able to find willing partners who are big believers in Duncan and Tyler and Kendrick and everybody else and say, you know what? I'll be willing to take on this contract and this player for the rights to another player. And Miami's going to try and do everything they can. So I think internally, at least, that would be my feeling, is that they view this team somewhere in between. Yes, they're contenders. Yes, they also need to completely overhaul the roster and bring in different players that are following in line with what Jimmy and Bam can bring. I think Kyle Lowry's a big target for this team. I really do believe that. I think they want that guy with championship experience that provides an area of need. I think they'd even be willing to move on from Goran Dragic too, if it's necessary. Like that one's a little harder to swallow because Goran has gone through so much in his tenure with Miami. But he's also last year he was on the trading block too, right? And it just didn't work out that way. So I mean, I don't believe it necessarily, or I don't know if it was ever corroborated. Seems like it was pretty close to happening, but you know, it's not worth talking about because it didn't, and he wound up being a significant contributor to their offseason. I'm sorry, to their, not just offseason, but also to their season in general, making it all the way through the bubble. So it's interesting. It should be a fantastic offseason. Like, that's another part of all this, is that it really will be a very interesting offseason. But if you want to make any bets right now about what happens with Miami's future, then let me tell you, BetOnline is the place for you. The fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline, but there's tons of sports action with the start of the new WNBA season, the NBA playoffs, the NHL, and much more. So head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the finals. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON. And when you make a little money over there, then go in and make a little bit more by saving some at BuiltBar.com. You can buy a box of the best tasting protein bar ever. Covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, 9 delicious flavors. You don't even know you're eating a protein bar, but you can build your own box of all those delicious flavors. You can get a couple here, a couple there. Mix and match. Give them away to friends and family. They'll love them. They'll be grateful. And you can save money right now if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15. You get 15% off your first order. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off, but only if you go to BuiltBar.com. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport. With the help of our local experts, follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. I'll try to keep this segment a little short because obviously I've gone a little long already, and I think it's something worth debating for the rest of our offseason. And look, it's not just a struggle for content or anything like this, but the reality is that these are issues that are going to keep coming up, and there are going to be names that are going to be on Miami's radar. There's already a list of top free agents that Miami should target and things of this sort. And I think there's plenty of time to go over these things before conversations are had in August. And look, conversations will be had before then, and we won't find out about it, but I'm sure players will already be contacted through various nefarious channels and reached out to and agreed upon before the August 1st deadline for when free agency can begin. And also, I'll mention this. Apparently, the schedule is going to be returning to some sort of normalcy. It's going to be the same kind of schedule it was. No compressed, abbreviated schedule. Go back to preseason in September or October and then carry on through all the regular months of the season the way it always has. It will not be 72 games. It will be 82 games next season. And so some people are excited about it. I am indifferent at this point because I think the reality is we've seen that it's going to be a challenge. I don't think it's going to be back to normal. I think we've all really jumped the gun on this one. I mean, this isn't, I don't want to go down this route anyway, but I think this assumption that things are back to the way they were, I'm seeing people celebrate arenas and stadiums filled with tens of thousands of fans. And I mean, even as we find out that the vaccination rate is a lot lower across the board than it once was, and I don't think we're quite there yet. So that's my two cents. Maybe I'm wrong in this. Maybe a lot of you disagree with it, but that's my opinion, and I will share it as I often have before. But this question comes in actually from Billy, big fan of the show, and I am a big fan of Billy's for submitting this question. But he says, should it be time to bring back the Rooks? Rook 1 had a tough season in Dallas this year. Rook 2 is floundering in Memphis. If Miami goes by the route that Wes Goldberg suggested in a recent show of going as deep as possible, does adding two guys who are at worst solid defensive players and at best a guy who can give you 13 to 15 a night, or is this something that's possible for Miami? So I'm paraphrasing here because the question is rather long, and again, I'm trying to keep this short. But I will say that I'm going to focus mostly on Josh Richardson because I think his return to the team seems a lot more likely. I think, one, we've seen him struggle in Philadelphia and miscast in Dallas as well. And I think he can't seem to get that mojo back. And I think a lot of it is because he really did gravitate towards putting in the work. And maybe the expectations were too high. Maybe he's just not found a way to get along with the various coaches that he's played for. Maybe it's just been difficult. Look, I mean, he played for Brett Brown, who, what we understand, Brett Brown wasn't a particularly great coach. And I think it was a little bit difficult for him to find his footing there. I think he also now is struggling to find his role with Rick Carlisle in Dallas. And I think a lot of that has to put on him. I think he is feeling immense amounts of pressure. And I think it's kind of similarly to what we saw from him a couple seasons ago before Jimmy's returned or joining Miami. And that Josh, I don't know if he is best suited for those kind of moments. It's not to say he can't come up big every once in a while, but I don't think he wants to be the guy who you're relying on as the third guy or something along those lines. I don't think he wants to be your star either, but I don't think he even wants to have that kind of major role. As much as he says and everybody else around him, and I've done my work, I think a lot of people have talked about how much he is capable and does want that leadership role. I think it's more of a quiet lead by example kind of thing than the verbal guy that inspires everybody else. He's going to do the work. He's more of a grit and grind kind of guy, to be honest with you. That's not to say he should be in Memphis or anything like that. I think he belongs in Miami, to be 100% honest with you. I think he likes the coaching staff. They were invested in him as a young player, a young up-and-coming player. But at the same time, while they spoke highly of him and thought highly of him, when it was time to be able to acquire said superstar in Jimmy Butler, well, off you go. And so I think that's a big part of it. But if Josh is a free agent now and he's available and he wants to take a cheaper deal to kind of just say, you know what, I want to come back to where it all started. I want to come back. I've made my money. Right now I can just enjoy playing for alongside Jimmy Butler, playing for Coach Spo. I know I'm wanted there. I'm part of this culture. I think it would be a great addition. Justice, not so much. Not just because I think there were egos bruised there. I think he'll always have love for Miami. Congratulations to Justice, by the way, because he and his, I don't know, girlfriend, fiance. I'm not sure what their the nature of their relationship is. But again, he's posting pictures of an expectancy in sometime in the next few months. So congratulations to them both, and hopefully the birth of a perfectly healthy baby. As far as Justice and the Miami Heat are concerned, I believe, as Billy points out in his email, there is an option year left. Maybe the team doesn't exercise it, and maybe he becomes a free agent too. Could he rejoin Josh Richardson in Miami? Less likely. I think the tension between the team and the player are still there to some degree. I don't think he'd be willing to come back here. I think it's been a bitter pill for him to swallow over the last couple of seasons, being a guy who thought he was on the track towards stardom and then realistically just got bogged down by injuries, and I don't know that he'll ever find a way past that. Like, the skill set's there, but I mean, defensively, he's as good as he ever was. Could he be just a defensive stopper? Is that enough in today's league? I don't think so. He is very good defensively. I don't think you can have guys like Tony Allen in today's league anymore. Those guys are liabilities. The same way you can't have, let's say, just off the top of my head, a Tyler Hero, because they're so good offensively and not so good defensively. I don't think you can have the inverse. Like, you can put them in there in very limited and special situations, but I don't think that's the role Justice wants either. So I don't know what his reality is. I don't know what he sees for himself moving forward. And I think he has to kind of figure it out, whether or not he's willing to be a guy who can be your sixth, seventh man off the bench, maybe eighth or ninth. I think it's more realistic. The offensive problems continue to be really egregious. He cannot score. He cannot shoot. He has a decent occasional floater, but also lacking the athleticism and explosive athleticism to finish at the rim. He's got right size. If he's healthy, he can be a contributor. But, man, he needs to be able to figure it out. And I don't know if Miami's a place for him, because, again, their window is a little differently. They're looking for guys who are willing to do the work and come in right now and not have any of the bullshit. You know, they're not nursing any egos. They're not going to be – it's been like this for a couple seasons now. I mean, they kicked Dion out. They kicked Hassan out. They knew it as soon as they signed Jimmy Butler. They said, this is it. We're not playing those games anymore. We're not going to bring guys along. We're not going to worry about them. No tolerance. Zero tolerance was the policy. And I think that's still the case. And it's not to say that they're bad off the court or anything like that, but I think there's a lack of understanding of what their role is supposed to be, and perhaps some personal and maybe a little bit public griping behind closed doors, of course. But I don't think that it's any secret that Justice wanted a bigger role in Miami, and he wasn't going to get it because, well, they got Jimmy Butler. So it's going to be a matter of player and franchise kind of understanding exactly what the role is, dictating what that role is. I think they'd take him back if he says that he's willing to do the work, but that seems a lot less likely. If Josh is willing to come back to the Heat, I think it's a great fit for both player and team. They could use a 3-and-D type player with shooting touch. I think he's certainly a better addition than a lot of the players that they've had here over the last couple of years since Josh left. So I think that would be a good matchup. Justice, better defender, but again, too limited in what he can do offensively, and I think that's a concern for both he and the team moving forward. But that's all for today. I'll be sure to talk about those two specific players at other times during the rest of the offseason, because I think they are big names. They're, well, not big in terms of talent or game changers or anything like that, but it'd be nice to see a reunion work out, at least with those two players. I think there's none of the ill will that was had with, you know, Hassan Whiteside, and certainly not with Dion. Those two will never wear a Heat jersey again. I feel pretty comfortable in saying that. I don't think there's any likelihood that either Hassan Whiteside or Dion Waiters will ever wear a Heat jersey again. Just a reminder that you can always reach me, however, via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com. Keep those questions coming. I really do appreciate it. I really am looking to get specific questions like Billy's about the team's offseason and future, so please do send them in. You can always reach out to me on Twitter using a direct message or using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please follow the show and leave a review. A lot of you have. I am very, very grateful for that. Thank you so much. Special thanks to all of our sponsors. But best of all, thanks to you. I'm David Ramil, signing off for now.